Want to be a part of the podcast network that actually likes things? Well, now you can join the Front Row Network by supporting us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/frontrownetwork to unlock all of the dozens of special perks that come from being one of our patrons, including exclusive episodes, on-air shoutouts, Ask Me Anything sessions, and even the ability to guest star on an episode of your choosing. That's right. Go to patreon.com/frontrownetwork to unlock all these special features with tiers starting as low as $1 a month. What, are we nuts? Of course we are. You've heard our shows. $1 a month can get you so much bonus content that you will not know what to do with it. So go to, once again, to patreon.com/frontrownetwork to join up with us. And hey, we will see you in the front row.
The door that finally opens with life flooding in spilling.
Hello, everybody out there in podcast land, and welcome to the Front Row Flashbacks for our inaugural episode of Flashbacks Presents Raised by Wolves. This spinoff series is different from our normal episode structure. Normally, we break down movies of our past and how they've influenced current pop culture and events. Well, today we're going to flip the script, and we're looking at a brand new show that just came out on HBO Max and has been heavily influenced by many movies we have and will cover on Front Row Flashbacks. Today, we're going to break down episode 1 and 2 of Raised by Wolves and talk about the pop culture influences that this show proudly wears on its shoulder, and about the greater discussion of artificial intelligence and our reliance on technology. We will bring new episodes every week, breaking down 2 episodes per recording. So please stay tuned with us as we work through breaking down this show. Along with me on this discussion and journey through this new futuristic world is my co-host, Aaron McCabe. How's it going, Aaron?
I am super pumped that we are finally moving forward with talking about some of these shows on the streaming platforms that deserve conversation. And I'm getting more and more excited about talking about Raised with Wolves now that I'm getting into it. How are you, Jay?
I'm doing well. And speaking of reliance on technology, we've actually pushed back our recording for a day because of some failed reliance on technology at the old McCabe household. So we got that technological issue under control now. It was It's not a smart fridge, is it, that went out?
No, it is not a smart fridge. My husband draws the line and says, we do not need an app on our phone that we can look inside and see our own food. But nope, just a run of the mill. This is for anyone listening out there. My advice to you is, don't get an LG refrigerator because there's only about 3 people on earth that can fix them at any given time because they have to be certified LG appliance repair personnel. So it's going to get fixed. We don't know when. We have food. We're going to make it.
So that's,
I don't know what else to say about 2020.
It's very interesting to me because I really want a smart fridge.
Do you really?
I really want a smart fridge, but I'm also very nervous. First of all, just to be clear, cannot remotely afford one right now. This is something in the future, but I like the idea of being able to just talk to your fridge and it can tell you what food is going to spoil because you put that information in. You can have your calendar.
Oh.
No more magnets. No more magnets. I got the pictures just cycling through on my refrigerator. I can check the weather while I'm getting my creamer for my coffee. And yes, I use creamer for my coffee. You know why? Because I enjoy life. So
I am slightly technology averse in the sense of, like, I will take a Rand McNally map over GPS. I go like Michael Scott, like technology a lie. Like, if you're telling me to take a right, I'm going left. If there's a lake there or not, I'm going.
Yeah.
Don't trust it.
Well, and when I was in the service, one of the big things of my job was being able to read a map. I doubt I could do it now. So I'll stick with the GPS.
I live in Chicago. You got to know the grid system if you want to get through the city appropriately.
My phone gets me everywhere. It's a good piece of technology. I don't know if that's artificial intelligence, but it's pretty intelligent. So I have a question. Have you only watched episode 1 and 2? Are you ahead of episode 1 and 2? Are you watching this? Because I'm going, whatever episodes we're covering, I'm watching that and I'm not moving ahead because I don't want to know what's going to happen. So how are you watching the show as we discuss it? I've only seen 1 and 2, even though I really want to watch 3.
I had to stop myself from watching 3 after finishing episode 2 before recording this podcast because I'm doing the same thing as you. I'm actually watching it 2 episodes at a time while we record so that I don't jump ahead either. But that was hard after episode 2.
Yeah, I really, really wanted to. I'm like, no. And part of that is I want in this discussion, I want us to see what we may think is going to happen. You know, what are our expectations? And then we'll come back the next week and see, were they right? Were they wrong? Were we way off?
Yeah.
I don't know what my expectations are after episode 2. Cause there's a whole lot that happens real quick. So good. Yeah. We're watching it. Same approach. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I cut you off there.
No, not at all. I'm just going to say, I think that's a great, I like your idea because this show is doing a good job and I think we'll get into it. But for me, it's really doing a good job of kind of throwing off where or leaving it very vague on where you think it's going to go. So each time, and you said it when we talked about the trailer, like you were like, wow, this went a completely different way than the trailer led me to believe. And so I think it'll be fun to do the 2 episodes at a time and kind of see if we we're right in our suppositions and our guesses as we move along through this series, or are we totally thrown off the entire time?
Yeah. Well, do you want to go ahead and give us a little bit of background information on the show and then
yeah,
right into your episode 1 breakdown?
You got it. So Raised by Wolves was created by Aaron Guzikowski. And I apologize if I didn't say that name correctly. This show premiered on HBO Max on September 3rd, 2020, so it's super, super new. The first 2 episodes were directed by executive producer Ridley Scott. You heard that right, Ridley Scott. He's directed both episode 1 and 2, and at least for me, you can tell. His presence is very, very palpable in the direction of these 2 episodes. And this show presents 2 androids raising humans on a planet called Kepler-22b after Earth has been destroyed by a great war. The androids, aptly named Mother and Father, attempt to raise these children as surviving humans, battle over religious differences and fear of artificial intelligence. Now, obviously, this sounds kind of vague. And what we're seeing in the first 2 episodes is that you're kind of getting, you know, this story now piecemealed together. And so in the first episode, we have in the 22nd century. So like, I believe this war takes place in 2145. You've got 2 androids, Mother and Father, who escape Earth that's been devastated by this war between what seems to be militant atheist group and a religious order known as the Mithraic. The androids leave this war-torn and devastated Earth in order to colonize the planet Kepler-22b, bringing with them human embryos to build a new civilization, a new atheist civilization as it's perceived in the first episode. So 12 years later, after the birth of, there were 6 children, is that correct? There were 6 embryos that these androids, mother and father, raise. And 12 years later now, there's only 1 child. His name is Campion. You see that the other children, as they progress, kind of get sick. One of them dies from an accident, you know, and so it's kind of goes through how the prospects for the future of this colony are appearing grim. Now you've only got 1 human, you've got 2 androids, and then the 3 of them end up discovering that a refugee ship that is carrying the Mithraic show up and are kind of surveying the planet Kepler 22b to see if there's any life. And so the episode ends with these Mithraic soldiers and an android coming down, kind of talking with the android mother and Campion, the human boy, and then getting into it at the end. And we'll talk about the episode. I won't get into all of it, and we can kind of discuss it and our thoughts about it.
Yeah. So what were your initial thoughts? What did you think first episode after you watched it? What did you think?
Gosh, it's really, I think I told you the ending got so intense. You know, we can just kind of get into that now, but basically you find out this, you know, they're androids raising humans, and mother becomes very much, I guess what you would hear in pop culture, a mama bear. But she basically like feels threatened that they're not only going to kill her, but they're going to take this child and say, you know, we'll get into that. But she basically destroys the ship and is like, no one's taking my kid, you know, destroys everything, goes ballistic. It's unclear if she's malfunctioning and that's driving this whole episode, or she's, if this is just in her programming. The show does a really fascinating job of talking, like showing the human qualities of the androids. It really makes you question, you know, their sentience. And I think that's something that Ridley Scott does. He does it in Blade Runner. He does it in this show. You know, that's definitely what I'm flashing back to. In this first episode, all of his androids tend to bleed milk-like substance. He's got that going, alien style. Always reminds me of Bishop. But I liked it. I liked the visual style. A lot of the same kind of like dark, deep color schemes, like Blade Runner, that noir kind of feel, like Gladiator. You know, that kind, I don't know how to explain that color pattern that he uses, but it's recognizable.
It's very distinctly Ridley Scott. You're right. Gladiator, yeah. The Martian, Blade Runner, Prometheus, like they all feel like they look like they could be in the same world or same universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I enjoyed it. What did you think?
I loved it. I liked it way more than I was very excited. Androids and Ridley Scott. I'm freaking in. although returns on some of his later alien stuff is a little up for debate. But there's no aliens here. This is all about the androids and human interaction. And I mean, Blade Runner's so good. Mm-hmm. It's so good. And that's, you can't help but immediately think of some of his stuff. I mean, I think that's part of the excitement that they developed, is him executive producing and taking the reins as director on the first couple episodes, is his history with sci-fi. And he has very deep and introspective views on androids and emotions and artificial intelligence and all that.
Yeah.
But right out the gate, it felt like a pioneer or a pilgrim story, right? A group of people chased off, some of it because of the fact they are androids, but some of it too is religious or lack of religious ideologies, as they are raising the children as atheists. You know, we don't quite get the full picture on the surviving humans and what their religious views are. It's made out to be that they're rather extreme, and the androids believe that religion is what creates conflict and all that stuff. So they're trying to raise the children differently. So it feels like a pilgrim story at the beginning, because they're chased off, they're hiding away out in the universe, trying to avoid detection, because if the humans find them, they're going to take the children from them. Mm-hmm. A good chunk of the beginning, I mean, half, three quarters of the first episode is them just surviving. And like you said, the unfortunate overtime loss of all but one of their children due to natural causes, accidents, sickness, things of that nature. So that right out the gate threw me off. I wasn't ready for, a new world type story, in 200 years from the future, you know? So I thought that was an interesting take, you know. Usually you think of, you know, like I said, the Pilgrims and Terrence Malick. I'm not a big fan. He did the New World movie, and you think of the Pilgrims and all that stuff. So it kind of felt like a version of that at the beginning. And then it flips on a dime, and I was not ready for Mother to turn into a killing machine. Like I said, they think some of it seems like it's malfunctioning, which is another interesting thing. We're talking Blade Runner. You're thinking The whole point of Blade Runner, right? They wanted to expand the time they're on this earth, right? Because they made the androids in that movie with a limited lifespan. Whereas this one, there was they didn't care. They knew they were malfunctioning. They're trying to set the children up for success to be able to survive. So a little interesting twist there, but then you think they're breaking down, and then she just turns into this death machine, which is also super rad how she was a death machine, because she just looks like this statue. It was almost like a Greek demigod, right? In the way she did it, very siren like. She used screams to literally explode human beings. But she poses like a statue when she does it. So kind of a siren Medusa type thing is what the vibes that gives off. But my initial thoughts, I loved it. And I was like, there was just a lot in one episode in an hour, and it all flowed very well. You know, they gave you backstory without bogging down in backstory, and brought you right to the present. And then, I mean, man, that story just flipped on a dime. And it starts with her terminating father intentionally over a fight on how they're raising the children. And that gets into episode two a little bit as well. I loved it.
It's really interesting how they don't give a ton of backstory, but they give enough, and the issues are important enough to like give a lot of meat to the episode right off the bat. You don't really know a lot about this war. You just kind of know it's between atheists and some really religious people. And usually we all know how that goes. And you're getting one perspective, and then the parents, and then you've got like these androids who Ridley Scott does a really great job of, you know, portraying those humanistic qualities. You've got these androids named Mother and Father who are arguing like a married couple over how to raise kids, right? Like the father android is okay with the like Campion kind of secretly playing around with praying. He's okay with him kind of experimenting with, like, I don't know, you know, spirituality or belief in something else, even though their mother is trying to very much raise him in alignment with her programming, which is no, it's atheistic. There should be no other reliance on anything outside of yourself. So it's really fascinating to even see those like very real everyday issues kind of being brought in this futuristic setting. Like, oh, some of the stuff just doesn't go away.
Yeah. Well, and what you mentioned about programming, because they, Mother and Father, the androids, continually bring up their programming.
Yeah.
And this is not part of the mission. You weren't programmed this. And some of it, he's saying, well, I'm programmed this because it seems like no matter what we do, he still thinks religion is a source of healing. And that may make him feel better. It also may make him come to the realization that it is, as they see it, a crutch.
Right.
So it's interesting. They both think they're approaching the programmed objective. The other part that's really interesting, like you said, just all these little things. Go back to when she's put this in air quotes, folks, birthing, you know, the weird way they show a really cool idea, concept on how she birthed the children. Not, looks like a robot would, I suppose. But then one of them's stillborn. Or we're under the impression it's stillborn. No heartbeat. She holds the baby and father very coldly. Well, we have to terminate this one so we can break it down for parts to feed the other ones, which is just like,
yeah,
holy crap. That is some intense cold stuff. And she won't hand him the baby. She's hanging on to him. And then she cries. She cries a tear. Yeah. And then the baby starts crying. And that's Campion, right? He was the weak run to the litter at the beginning, and now he's the only one that survived. But there's these interesting little details they put in there where you go, they keep referring to program, but they each keep doing things that seem like they're motivated by emotion, not by programming. Like, that was not in her programming to cry a tear and hold the baby longer when it was stillborn. Then fast forward to when the humans arrive and they're going to terminate her and take Campion off and do whatever they're going to do. I suppose part of it was a survival thing, but I think that was another emotional reaction, right? That's where we learn she's not malfunctioning. She's a different kind of android.
Right.
And she's the, I didn't write it down. I can't remember what they have a name for,
She's a necromancer.
A necromancer, yeah. And that's when but it seemed like it was an emotional response that caused that more than programming. So it's a really cool way to start exploring, like you said, their sentience. What's programming? What's emotion? How are they evolving? Are they able to develop emotion? And they're able to do that, just like real subtle little things sprinkled throughout the episode culminated in that. Finale when she goes on to the ship, and we didn't mention, right, that ship was an escape ship from Earth, so that's the remainder of humanity. You know, they mentioned Campion as an endangered species. So not only does she go berserk over her son, she essentially commits genocide. I mean, she wipes out a majority of existing human life for her son, which is an interesting who is a human, right? So then you start getting into that.
Well, and that was a ship of the Mithraic, the religious group on Earth that was the other side of the war. So not only did she do that for her son, but she also viewed them as a threat. Like, remember, you know, religion people were dangerous and they are, you know, religious. I don't know if they refer to them as like radical, but extremists and everything. And faith is dangerous. And not only did she commit genocide, but like she exterminated a threat, not only just to human race, but of this, to her, programmed as dangerous. Would she have done that to the whole ship of atheists? We'll never know.
And let me ask, we get the impression that they're extreme in their beliefs?
Only from what the atheists have programmed.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Is there anything they show that implies that? Or we're just kind of told that from one viewpoint, right?
I think we're kind of told that through one viewpoint, which is what I also find fascinating about the show, is that based on the programming of the androids, you're told that this other group, that the religion is dangerous and that religion itself is dangerous because you're believing in something that doesn't exist. So that's what I'm getting. If any of the listeners out there want to comment and say, oh no, you missed this and this is what they showed. But that's what I'm finding so fascinating is the perspective they're just peppering in and laying down kind of as law or as programming.
Yeah, there's a lot in the episode, so we absolutely could have missed it. For me, I watched it this week. Didn't even have time for a second viewing with some of our other programming going on. So Yeah. So I'm hoping, so I'll put my thoughts for later episodes. I'm hoping we get a few episodes from the human's perspective, just to get a little better. We got a little bit of that in episode two, but it's more of like one person's story, not as much of the right. overarching humans. So I'm very intrigued to see, so we can see what their actual views are and where they're coming from. Cause I that's where I see the show culminating, is we're really going to get both sides, and both sides look bad in some ways and look good in some ways. And so I'm really interested to see that. But that brings us to our next part. What do you think about the acting? And quite frankly, there's not a lot of people to talk about.
Right.
Because, you know, they're outcome very bit parts, a lot of the kids and background players. But really it's Amanda Collin, who plays Mother. I'm gonna butcher this guy's name. Aboubakar Saleem as father, and Wynta McGrath as Campion. Now we have Travis Fimmel as Marcus. Now he's the only one, you know, he's kind of the star from Vikings, was in the Warcraft movie. You know, he's in the movie, so he's the name for the show. But we really don't get much interaction from him in that first episode. So of kind of the threes, Mother, Father, and Campion, what did you think about those performances?
I think the best performances are the androids. You know, which is funny because you're supposed to think of them as this like cold, calculated, programmed, non-feeling entities. And it feels like the woman playing Mother is fantastic. She's fabulous because she's walking the line of being an android and kind of suffering or like fighting back emotional impulses the entire time. And even like just in watching her facial expressions, you kind of see that struggle on her face the whole time. So like, I'm super impressed with her performance. I love the gentleman playing Father. I think he's great. He plays such an amazing balance of, he's just kind of that like, reliable. I mean, he's an android, but he's like that reliable dad. Like he's emotionally, he seems even keeled. He's compassionate. He's understanding, but also logical and rational. I think those two are just doing a killer job. And of course the kid playing Campion, I'm sure we're going to see a ton from his acting range as the series goes on. But since the first episode really focused on those two, on their relationship and just them kind of guiding these kids and then going through the rest of the episode, like those two, they're my favorite. But I'd say the guy playing Father is he's my number one favorite right now.
Yeah, they're both phenomenal. And I looked them up. I mean, they have acting credits, but I don't think anything I had seen, or if I had seen it, it looked like they were nothing more than a bit player. So I thought they were both great. They really did walk that line of, do they have emotions? Were they programmed with emotions? There's absolutely right. times where we're supposed to believe there's programmed emotions, you know, forced smiles, in certain scenarios, the clearly forced smiles, you know, they yeah. seem slightly inappropriate to the emotions at hand. And then other times they seem like the emotions fit. So man, that's what you do as an actor, is you emote, you know, like that's gotta be a hard thing. I need you to emote someone who's confused by emotions, you know, and yeah. doesn't understand them. And, it was interesting to see those performances and really feel like I struggled to understand, go back to that word you use, sentience, like where are they actually, are they feeling? Like, are they?
Yeah.
Or is this just really, really good artificial intelligence programming? But I think that's a testament to their acting is how.
Yeah.
Good.
And the writing and directing. This is like, this is straight up Blade Runner. Like, are they, is it a replicant or is it not a replicant?
Yeah.
You know?
And one like, thing, yeah. And I'll say like, this feels like that same world, except way earlier models.
Yeah.
Right? Cause I think there is a thing. Cause when we do meet the humans, right? Marcus, Travis, Flamel's character, he immediately goes, so what are we going to do about the androids? Like he knew right away.
Right off the bat, yeah.
Right away that she was an android. So it wasn't, but the others were a little confused, but we kind of find out why maybe he's got a better, for lack of better terms, bullshit detector than the rest.
Right.
And we kind of find that out in episode two, but that was... Yeah, thought they were both phenomenal. I thought Campion was good. He gets a little more meat in the second episode. So, yeah. And I agree. I think I'll go with Amanda Collins' mother. Man, I think she had a gamut of emotions to fake slash not fake, you know,
right,
as the android. So, I thought, man, they were both so good.
You know, it's really something that you can, it's one thing to, like you said, emote one emotion, but to do it in layers and exactly. And you can see that where she's like, you can, how good you have to be able to like emote faking an emotion. Like where she, you can tell where she's, I can't, you know, obviously anyone listening, but where you can kind of see it on her face, like, I've tilted and like she's trying to play a cooler actor, like, you know, be compassionate, and it's obvious that there's like kind of a twitch in her eye, and like she doesn't know how to actually, she's like feigning the emotional response, and that she's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's interesting a lot of what they go through to compare it to something you may run into, kind of some of the symptoms that go along with, you know, being on the spectrum. Right. Not understanding those emotions and seeing that stuff. So, and I think that's kind of the vibe they were, you know, wanting to
yeah.
be used by emotions, sort of get them, know how to fake them. Man, they nailed it. But, let's move into just the world, the science fiction world, that we were introduced to. Kepler 22b is the planet, the spaceship, just the look of this science fiction world and the feel of the world. What, you know, get away from the acting. Let's look at the scenery. Let's look at the costumes, the design and that kind of thing. What'd you think about that?
You know, it's interesting for something that's set in the future, they go to this planet that feels super prehistoric. They're finding these, you know, it's like very, seems very dry, like they almost land in like a desert region. They talk about there being a tropical region on the planet. So obviously it's, you know, it's terraformed. But it's very prehistoric. There's like giant, you know, reptile bones, and there's obviously dangerous places. There's big, huge pits. So it feels fate. There's not a lot of, like planets in the sky or anything, like some scenes where it's like would make you really feel like it was super extraterrestrial. It just kind of feels like they could really be in a desert anywhere. And then the costumes and the costumes and the way that they're raised and they build little, like the houses and the huts and everything, it seems very rudimentary. And like what the androids are wearing are very sleek and simple. So like, I think that really gives you that, like you were talking about, like that pilgrimage kind of prehistoric, like we are starting over vibe.
What about yeah. You? Yeah. And even the human stuff, I mean, there's more design to it. It doesn't feel all homemade, but
right.
Everything has a much sleeker design than I think I'm used to with Ridley Scott. I think it worked, right? Mm-hmm. But like, whereas like But it's interesting, right? Because we're not on Earth. We're not on a junky old ship. Mm-hmm. There's a nice ship that the androids showed up on. The ship that the humans are on is nice. And so it's just much sleeker and less and more polished, but simple, right? Not a bunch of excess stuff. Kind of more the Apple look. Than the PC look, I guess.
That's a good way to think about it. And yeah, I'll say this as far as costumes too, back to what we were talking about like, you know, religious themes and the themes that, that are kind of interspersed in this show so far, is when the humans from, I believe, the Mithraic, I believe their god, deity, whoever they pray, is Sol. So whether that's the actual sun itself or the name of the deity or the god they pray to, Sol, their costumes are very, or their like clothing is very, what's the word? It's like kind of like crusader.
Crusade. Yeah. Crusade. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Very Knights Templar, the white and the red. And I thought that was really fascinating. So I don't know if that's also playing into our programming as the show's going on. It's like, do we already think they're maybe a little more religiously extreme because they're coming out like, and this is playing on things like we've already learned historically and like, you know, how the Crusades went and everything. I don't know, but I love their costumes. I thought that was great.
Yeah, I don't even think I paid any thought to that till you started like in mid thought. I'm like, oh, I know exactly what she's describing it as.
Right?
Like I didn't even think that. I'm sure I did subconsciously, because the second you started saying that, that's interesting. I also thought just they kept showing, you know, multiple moons in the sky, and it's just like, it's just a really pretty world. Like just, man, is this a really sleek, sharp looking show? And you're right. I think you would, if you watch this and didn't know Ridley Scott directed it, you'd be like, man, this definitely feels like Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott,
for sure.
100%. Let's look into some of the real world implications with the show. You know, we are in a much more tech savvy world. I don't know that we're in the realm of artificial intelligence quite at this extreme a level. But there is some real world stuff. Kepler-22b is a real planet. It is a real planet that they think could sustain life. So it's not some made up planet. So that's already out the gate. They're trying to base this in a world more real than maybe what we're used to. But and just the implications of artificial intelligence, you know. Honestly, artificial intelligence, not something I put a lot of thought in. I got to get a smart fridge. And then
an AI fridge.
Yeah. Open the fridge door, Hal. Open the fridge door. Yeah. So I don't know. What are you? Are you afraid of artificial intelligence? Do you think it's a good thing? Do you think it's something we should try to make?
You know, this just popped into my head. I mean, this is a girl who's like trying to use Rand McNally maps or rap maps instead of GPS. But I think it's an interesting thing to think about AI and our dependence upon something outside of ourselves. But what I'm now finding ironic as we talk about it is you have these androids who are teaching these children to not depend on a religion that creates faith in something outside of themselves. At the same time, these humans are now reliant upon these androids and this artificial intelligence or this technology to get them, you know, even out into space and to try to colonize a planet to sustain life. Like, life wouldn't be there without the mother and father androids to grow the embryos and, you know, start this civilization of six children again. But now you're in this place where they are dependent upon the technology to get there. So I don't want to say I'm one of those where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, it's so bad, but I'm conscious and cognizant of asking myself, when am I depending on something too much outside of myself that I could be reliant on myself about? And I think that's hard as technology changes in the world, but even real world implications, like, you know, when COVID hit, there were certain things that were being manufactured outside of this country that we didn't realize our reliance maybe on not, you know, creating those things within our own country and how supply chain interruptions may impact people in different arenas negatively. So, like, I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing to throw out there. Like, when is assistance becoming dependence? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I talk about that a lot as a safety professional, you know, where, like I always tell this stupid, just base it down way simpler, right? I used to have a car with automatic lights. Then I got one with manual lights.
Oh my gosh.
Had
right.
No idea how reliant I had become on those automatic lights till I pulled onto a very dark interstate and the doofus in the road wouldn't get over. And I was like, what the hell is this guy's deal? Get over. And then he starts flashing his lights at me because I never turned my lights on. And I didn't know I did, right? Even that, like, what a simple, right, small version of what you're saying. And then I guess,
I met a 12-year-old a couple weeks ago who was lost. She had ridden her bike too far away from home. She was crying. I was like trying to help her. She was at her aunt and uncle's and had made a wrong turn, didn't know the neighborhood. And I said, what's your mom's phone number? She didn't have her cell phone with her. She didn't know her. Like, so because she was so dependent upon the phone itself, when she didn't have the phone, she didn't know people's phone numbers.
Mm. Yeah.
So there is definitely like, there's real world applications to becoming too dependent on technology, even in these small ways, like the lights or the phone, and all these things that like we just forget about until we're in that situation.
How many phone numbers do you know?
I know my husband's, I know my mom's, I know my sister's, I know my own, I know my work phone. I know the number to the caddy shack that I worked at in high school.
Same landline. Remember your
same landline. It was a pay phone. You could call it both ways.
Remember your phone number from when you were a kid?
708-598-9306.
I heard some doubt in there.
I had to make sure I was right.
No, it's interesting, right? We're the same way. It's not just that girl. Like, we don't have a handful of numbers now. Growing up, I was the phone book for my friends. So none of those jabronis ever learned any numbers. They were just like, Jay, what's so-and-so's number? And then I'd be like, 476, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And then
right.
I'm like, nope, I don't know anybody's number.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you think, like, because we are in the era of Watson, right? Watson beat my man, Ken Jennings. And then other guy that I can't remember his name. Right. I mean, it's, I don't know if it's programmed intelligence, but I think there's right algorithms where it can continue to learn. Do you think if it can continue to learn, do you think it's possible for artificial intelligence to develop emotions or program emotions?
You know, this is so interesting. We got to that podcast on Westworld. Because that's another show talking about sentient artificial intelligence that ends up developing humanistic qualities. Do I think that there is a program that possibly technology could be so intelligent that it develops emotions? Sure. Why not? I do. I think it's probably possible. Or is so good at feigning them like mother that you start to have a difficult time being able to
differentiate.
Is it real or not?
Yeah. Cool. Hey, tell me about episode two.
Oh my God. Episode two. So after you guys got to watch, first of all, episode one, if you haven't, then I'm going to ruin it for you when we talk about all the...
Why are you still listening?
Why are you... Stop what you're doing right now and go watch it. After Mother does all the destroying of everything and everyone on the ship in one of the most eerie ways, we go on to episode two. And where that picks up is basically after the Mithraic vessel is destroyed, Mother brings five surviving Mithraic children, Tempest, Paul, Hunter, Holly, and Vita, back to the colony to raise them alongside Campion. And it's like this weird, crazy, again, like kind of twitchy way where she's like, you know, Campion's basically like, oh my God, you just destroyed a ship with all these people on it. And she's like, I brought you friends. This should make you happy now. Like, I'm going to raise these. Like, she is fulfilling her mission as a mother.
I murdered a ton of people so you would have some friends. So maybe a little gratitude.
Right. Twitch. One of the Mithraic soldiers, crusaders, Marcus, he has survived. And he is now trying to survive the conditions on Kepler 22b and trying to get back. I think he knows where the mother and father's colony is. Mother decides to take pieces of the android that was with the Mithraic apart. She changes out her eyes. Her eyes were what was allowed her to basically destroy all of these other beings. And so for a safety, like fail safe, she took her eyes out and replaced them with the other androids. And then she also repairs father. And so she repairs father, she reboots him. He wakes up and is like, what happened? Why did you reboot me? He's obviously not very trusting of mother. You've got the five other kids. They are now living with this family quotes, and are clearly distressed. And then you have a flashback to 2145 when right before the Mithraic vessel took off. And what we find out is that Marcus and the woman that he was fighting with were actually, and correct me if I mess this up or say this wrong, but they were actually atheists fighting on the atheist side. They find some sort of medic, like the planet's going to go, Earth's going to go. They find some medic android. They find out the medic android can do plastic surgery, and he has all of the records of the Mithraic, like, military leaders and like higher ups. And so they pick two of them, one being Marcus and his wife, and they basically get facelifts and eye changes to match their records so that they can get aboard the Mithraic ship and they can stow away and, well, not really stow away, but like they can get on the ship and get off of Earth and survive with the rest of the Mithraic. So that's an interesting twist that I surely didn't see coming. and so they also find out they have a child. Is it Hunter or Paul?
I don't remember.
One of those kids. And so then it ends up that one of the kids, so Marcus, who adopts this kid who's the child of the person he facelifted, it's now his kid, and that kid survives and is now being raised by mother. Does that sum it up?
I think that sums it up.
Okay.
Yeah. What'd you think about this one? Because this one was shorter. The first one's an hour. The second episode was 42 minutes, so it wasn't as long.
So it was interesting. It kind of was like a flip flop in the sense that I felt like the first episode, I don't want to say like there wasn't as much action. It was just like, we're colonizing this planet. Then things got crazy for like 10 minutes and you're like, holy shit. And then this episode was like more intense in the very beginning and then kind of dragged a little bit where it was like, we're just figuring out, like, these kids are with us now and we're teaching them the ropes and they can't, you know, use religion and no one really trusts mother. And it wasn't very eventful. It was just in that first 10 minutes where, like, you find out the new information about Marcus. But it was good. It made me want, I wanted to go into episode 3 right away. What about you?
Yeah, same. Although I thought this one, where's the first one? It felt like they sprinkled in exposition very well. This episode a little bit, but mainly the Marcus bit felt like they were trying to cram in more exposition. I thought it worked right. I think it's going to pay off later. I don't think the information about Marcus, other than us going like, oh, he's a shifty dude. Okay. But like, I already thought he was a shifty dude because the android told me he was a shifty dude, but also the android's a shifty dude. Man, everybody's a shifty dude on this show. So, I mean, it did that, but I think that's something that'll probably pay off a little more later in the show. But yeah, I thought it was very good. There was the bit where there was creatures on the planet that they had never encountered in their however many years. They were on that 12 years on that planet. They'd never encountered any creatures. And then once the humans arrived, so, you know, you're not sure, maybe they got stirred up from all the activity. They said something about a group landing in the tropical zone, tropical area. I might be blurring. There's a lot going on. But so she puts the eyes back in and, you know, evaporates them into pink mist with her special siren scream. But I thought the eyes thing was interesting. I'm not sure exactly. Like, I think eyes, you know, the eyes being the thing that switches her from mother to necromancer murder machine. I think there's something to why they picked the eyes, you know, not some chip. Not some, you know, like she has a multitude of ways that we view the world and view how we approach things. I don't know. I think there was more depth to why they chose eyes as the vehicle that turns her from mother to the necromancer. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but, you know, maybe it's us, you know. Like, you and I, we see each other differently than our spouses see us, you know? Right. Like, so maybe it's a thing where it's just that human nature where we have a different face we tend to show different groups of people. And mother seems to, she did bring out the necromancer to protect Campion, but it seems like overall she's not real itchy to let him see that. And then one other thing that happened that I really liked was that's the first time we see father like lose his cool is the beginning of that scene. Those creatures are coming there. They kill some of the other humans. They're going, oh crap, these things are big and strong and tough and we need the murder machine. And they go to get the eyes in a hiding spot that they placed them in. They're missing. And there is some tension, right? Because mother thinks father destroyed him and he doesn't have a clue, which actually kind of helps their bond because she thanks him later for trusting
him.
But then they find it's Campion who took him because he doesn't want his mother to act that way, human murder machine monster. But he goes to Campion and he shakes him and he yells at him, and I think he realized he had father had to get angry to take care of the situation. He realized his normal demeanor. And then once again, was that emotion or was that programming?
Right.
And so we still continue to see these things where we go, I'm not sure. So I think they continued with their high quality acting. We got to meet some of the other kids. They were fine. They were good. They didn't have a whole lot of meat to chew on. You know, there is a little tension with Campion, just like he's very weird to them, you know.
Right.
This dude's never watched TV or eaten candy, so he's a little outside of our realm of what we're used to.
He's got a newt quality to him.
Yeah.
He really does.
So there is some interesting tension, but the acting's fine there. You know, just to elaborate on the acting, I think carries on from what we said. Travis Fimmel as Marcus had a little bit more, but still not a lot.
You know, no.
He was perfectly fine. I keep bringing him up because I'm a huge Vikings fan. Man, Ragnar Lothbrok's my man.
Maybe I'll check it out.
Yeah, I'll say I haven't finished it. I'm at kind of the end of his run on the show, but he's one of my favorite characters on TV ever. So really anxious to see what they do with him. I hope he's not just a wasted name that's in there. So I liked it. It inspired me to – I really didn't want to have to wait to watch the next episode. But for our art, for our medium, where we talk about other people who are far more artistic than us, I've decided to wait.
Jay Hoffman, the giver, everyone.
Yes, I'm you're welcome. I'm a gift unto you all. I think a lot of the other things we talked about probably – you know, the real world implications, sci-fi world, I think kind of carry over. But what I want to get into, and the reason why this is Flashbacks Presents, is the film influences before we kind of wrap up our discussion. But what I have a list of movies that I could pick out of this. I want to see what movies did you see? I'll say this beforehand. I think Ridley Scott's work inspired Ridley's, you know, I think a lot of it's that's not shocking, but it is a good continuation of his work, I think. And he's the sci-fi guy, man. He's really put real world feeling and aesthetics and, you know, I can't speak for the science, but into these topics. And so I think this just carries on a tradition of what he's really strong at. But what did you see in this movie?
He's really bringing, I feel like what this show is bringing is a lot of the best of his work, like the best aspects of his work. Especially visually, especially in the aesthetics. Something we haven't talked about at all actually is the sound and the score and the soundtrack. And that's really, you know, he does that very well with Blade Runner. He does that very well with Gladiator. He does that very well in, I think, The Martian too, just in a different way. But like, again, like, you know, I'm a big soundtrack person and I love the way that they're matching that up. But Blade Runner, you know, I think the theme of, and the questions, you know, we brought this up in one of the other episodes, like Blade Runner is based off the book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And the whole point of that title of that book is, do they think and dream about the same things as humans do? Like the same wants, the same needs, the same, do they fall into the same mundane habits, you know, of like, and what we're kind of seeing with Mother is she doing these things because there are maternal instincts that whether you are a human being or a sentient, artificially intelligent and evolving being end up taking on. So, definitely Blade Runner. You brought up The Martian. I'll let you talk about that. You've brought that to my attention. Like, somehow I forgot that was a Ridley Scott film. And I really enjoyed that. That's another one based on a book. He does a really great job, Ridley Scott, of bringing to life book adaptations. So, and then, like I said, I'm bringing up, as we talk about it, I'm seeing more of the correlations with Alien, definitely in the androids. Everyone's bleeding a milky substance. Yeah, I don't know. That's where I'm starting off with. What about you, Jay?
All right, yeah, with Alien and Prometheus too, but more Alien, right? Because they don't even realize he is an android until much later in the movie, you know. And then,
right,
why is there an android here? And there's a lot of skepticism among the crew and a lot of distrust after the fact. And so, I think that plays into it. And same thing with Prometheus, just not as well. But The Martian, I actually thought, you know, I went in, watched the trailer, and I'm like, all right, Blade Runner 2.0. And I'm like, oh, 3/4 of this movie is The Martian. It's Matt Damon trying to make potatoes on Mars. You know, they're
not the humor.
Yeah.
And the music.
They are making a farm on this undiscovered land. And so very much those scenes were reminiscent. And then episode 2, the face swap. Hello, face off.
I know.
Honestly, until you started talking, I'm like she's describing face off right now. So yeah, face off, get in there.
I thought about saying it, but I didn't. I made a
open the refrigerator bay door howl reference. So 2001 A Space Odyssey, when Mother goes ballistic.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, is this a howl? Is this a howl situation that we have going on? Kingdom of Heaven, not so much the look, but I'm sure that's some of what the appeal probably was to, you know, the religious aspect, the battle of religion and the Crusades, and this feels like a futuristic crusade. So saw some of Kingdom of Heaven in there.
Yeah.
As well. I think that's, I like that you mentioned Gladiator, more the just cinematography and the lighting and the color, and more so than the story, but yeah, it does feel very reminiscent of that. So yeah, there's a lot of, there's a lot of Ridley Scott, inspiring Ridley Scott to do very good things. But like I said, I think there's some other little sprinkles in there, and I'm sure I missed some of them. Like I said in our intro, this show just feels like it wears it, its influences on its shoulder. And I think that's a good thing, because I still did not and do not know where this story is going to go. So before we do our outros, instead of a conclusion, what do you think? Why don't I go, what do you think's going to happen? Where do you think the story's going? Because I don't have a clue.
I don't have a clue. I really don't. They're doing a great job keeping this super mysterious. You know what? What's one of the best parts right now is, like, I'm starting to go, I like that I can be like, who's the bad guy? You don't know. And I like that about the show, because I think sometimes another real world implication, like the bad guy is also can be very perspective, you know, related to. And so I think it's very fascinating that they're keeping it so shrouded. Like, I really don't know whose side to be on, if that makes sense. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's all very interesting. And I think TV as a whole, about the last decade, you know, we're in the golden age of TV with the streaming services and all that. Mm-hmm. We're getting fantastic television. But I think that's been kind of a tenet, is we keep the who's the good guy, who's the bad guy? Or are they both a little bad and both a little good? Do they both have views, you know, that, right. that are maybe not justifiable, but understandable?
Yeah.
And that's where we are right now. Because they, like I said, we don't really know much about the humans, but we know Marcus is slimy. You know, that I think was the intent of that scene. While to me, the scene felt a little bit out of place, but it was just to plant that seed. So you're like, this dude's a slime ball. So don't trust everything you're seeing and everything that's happening right now.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So we're, I don't have a clue. I have no clue what's going to happen next.
It's going to be a surprise to everybody.
Man, yeah, it'll be a tough guess for us. So, well, all that being said, I enjoy talking these episodes. So I'm actually like really pumped to work through this show, because this is a show we can bite into. I'm watching a few other shows. We're all probably watching The Boys right now. Man, I love that show. Love that show. I don't know if I want to talk about it. I want to talk about this show and dive into it. I just want to watch and laugh at the gore and the satire and the making fun of comics on that. This show, there's meat here, man. There's just so much meat, and I want to talk about it because I've already learned some things just having the conversation that I missed and I didn't notice. And I think this is going to be one of those shows that's lots of layers.
And I love TV like that. You know, I love TV now that you have all of these shows where you can learn something from all of the characters in different ways, and especially the villain. I felt very strongly like that in Man in the High Castle. My favorite character in that show was actually the guy who was the villain. He was the most interesting and fascinating character. So, and I think this show is going to be the same way. It's going to have all these layers. It's going to make us think about these things and these real world implications. And I think we're going to have some very good conversations coming up as this show goes on. So we'd like to thank you guys for joining us for this first episode of Flashbacks Presents. And we hope you'll join us in the weeks to come so we can talk about a lot more of this show to bite into. Like Jay's mentioned, there's a lot of meat to this to these episodes and to this show in general. I did just see already in the entertainment news that this show's already been picked up for a second season. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that came out a day or two ago.
Ah, okay. And so, you know, I think we're just going to keep getting further into whether the real world implication of technology presented in the show or the heavy influence of science fiction film has on this show. You guys can find us, remember, on whatever medium you get your podcast search and or your podcast from. You search and follow the Front Row Flashbacks for more of our content.
Yeah, also you can find our main podcast feed, the Front Row Network, on Facebook, and subscribe to our feed on Spotify, once again, or whatever other medium you use. I believe we're on Amazon now. We can also be found on NPR Illinois' website under the Community Voices tab, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. Also, you can find our Patreon on the Front Row Network's Facebook page. So if you've enjoyed this content, there's more like it and more available if you want to join us as a full-time patron. Once again, thanks for joining us, and we will see you all in the front row.
Just like love will do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z.